scores! DK wins it for an end round!
What is going on, guys? Welcome back to the Lions Blog Podcast. This is your host, Gavin, here after a big 2-1 win in the U.S. Open Cup over the hated Tampa Bay Rowdies. A lot of fans coming out for a midweek matchup. It was great to see. The wall was bouncing. A really great environment. Just wanted to just shout that out. It was a great match. I'm glad they put it at Exploria Stadium. Here to enjoy the win with me, to talk about some of the good stuff around the win, maybe some of the bad off-the-field stuff, and then a quick preview for the New York Red Bulls is Chase. Chase, did you enjoy the game last night?
Yeah, I had a great time. I definitely enjoyed the second half of it more than I enjoyed the first, but it's a great game all along. Always good to get a win over the Rowdies. What is that, 8 on the bounce?
I think it's 7.
7.
I think it's 7.
Yeah, either way.
Yeah, so first and foremost, I'm a 2015 Orlando City fan. I'd been to a couple USL games, like, as a kid, but I wasn't, like, you know, I wasn't following them. I wasn't content creating for Orlando City or anything like that. I just knew they existed as a USL team. And when they came to MLS, when Kaká was announced, all that, that's when I really started getting involved, like a lot of fans. So I don't have the kind of emotional bad blood history that some fans do with Tampa. Do you have that history with them?
Me? No, I would agree with you as well. I was the same thing. I went to USL games a lot with my soccer teams, like my club teams. That would be like a, I don't know, team bonding, whatever you want to call that. We'd do that. And like, I think I went to... You know, like, I went to the 7-4 game or, you know, like, some things like that. But obviously, as you can tell, I was never really paying too much close attention in the USL era. So I would agree as well that, like, me personally, like, I feel probably more disdain towards, like, in Atlanta or even, like, an Inter Miami than a lot of people would face towards the Tampa Bay Rowdies, which I get kind of might speak ill of my fanhood, I suppose. But, you know, yeah, I wasn't around at that time, unfortunately. So as much as I've kind of globbed on and I'm like, we don't like these guys, and I can definitely understand why. I've gone back and kind of tried to understand why. It would be a falsehood of me to try to act like I'm as passionate as some of the people who have been here since day one, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm kind of the
same. At least towards the Rowdies.
Yeah, towards the Rowdies, yep. I'm kind of the same. My personal rivalries are based on some of the experiences against some teams. So I can't stand Columbus Crew, actually. And a lot of it comes from that ghost penalty match, and then Will Trapp smacking in the winner like 2 minutes later, like,
it was quite a goal.
Yeah, it was a really good goal, but like, I just felt so cheated, and I just hate them now.
For sure.
Yeah, and then Atlanta, like, yes, Atlanta to me is a rival, but it's more because, like, I've been to those games where we've dominated them for 80 minutes and lost 2-0.
Yeah, I think especially with that spell where we just were unable to get even a point off of them.
Yeah,
it was just the most frustrating time, at least for me to be a fan.
Yeah, like, we would be the better team on, like, a lot of the games, and then there was just some sort of curse that we could not beat this team. We couldn't even get a point against them, and of course, then they would, like, make fun of us for it. And it's like, yeah, but we were the better team. And they're like, yeah, but we won. And it's like, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, they would say that it's not even a rivalry. Oh, yeah. That would like yours.
Yep. I do have a special hate in my heart for that team. But I wouldn't say it's because of the manufacturedness of it. You know, first season in the league for them, they were rivals. Like, I don't really have a hate for NYCFC like some people do, other than just Anton Tinnerholm, because fuck that guy. But I do acknowledge he's a good player. All right, let's get into the match. We do have some talking points to discuss. We're going to start with the match, then we'll kind of pivot to some Gaston Gonzalez news. before finishing off with the New York Red Bulls preview. And first thing I wanted to touch on with the match is let's just get straight into Thomas Williams, right? I think that's the big talking point for a lot of fans, 17-year-old center back. We had heard about him.
Brevard County native.
Really?
Which Super Bowl boys from Titusville?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Homegrown for me. Yeah. Obviously, born and raised in Melbourne, Florida over there. So, I thought he had a really good performance, personally. I thought he was good on the ball. I thought he was good in the air. And I thought he was tested as well. You know, I didn't think this was a, oh, we had 70% possession. He just had to kick the ball around and had to make a tackle or two. Like, the ball got floated up to his side multiple times. He had to deal with the ball in the air. He got put under pressure a couple times while on the ball, and I thought he handled it really well for the most part. For you, a lot of times I know that debuts tend to be like really good performances. That's how I feel a lot of times. So one debut I go back to, and I think he's in MLS now, actually. His name is Tyler Blackett. He was like some academy kid for Manchester United. Had a great game against Arsenal, or like a Reese Oxford for West Ham had a great game against Arsenal.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and then just the rest of their careers like bleh. So like, do you think he can, and I know it's small sample size, do you think this was just debut, kind of everyone has a good performance on their debut for the most part, or do you think he can continue on with these performances?
Yeah, I mean, that is a very hard question to answer, obviously, because a career can go in so many different aspects. You know, he's only 17, so he's far and away from being the player who he is going to end up being, if that makes sense. And I mean, I hope that it's not, I mean, a flash in the pan is hard to say. It's hard to read into one performance one way or the other. I think the biggest takeaway from this game is that he was really good and he deserves to try to continue to play to gather form to see if he can establish some level of consistency, as much as you can expect out of a 17-year-old, especially now that he's effectively our third choice center back, unless we try to move some players around or something like that, like Kyle Smith or something, to the center back spot. Oh, excuse me. But I mean, by all accounts, he looked very good. Also, one thing that I saw that I was really pleased about is, you know, even like, I thought Mikey Halliday was quite good in his appearances last year, quite like, relatively speaking, he did well. He filled in quite well. But I think that there were some times where if he was going to have not much time to, you know, take a touch and then move the ball on, or if he was going to have to hit a one-touch pass, like Antonio Carlos, for example, who would typically be on the right side, would be a bit hesitant to play to him because, you know, maybe he didn't necessarily earn his trust quite yet, which isn't obviously the end of the world. He's a young player. He was called upon for injury issues to play in the league. Like, that's understandable. But I think Tommy Williams, and, you know, we were playing against a team who, at least in the first half, for lack of a better term, outplayed us, although we were kind of looking to absorb pressure, I feel like. It was a USL team, but he still was trusted by his teammates. Like, they were not afraid to play him the ball if they knew that he was going to have to take a touch and turn or hold himself off, and he never shied away from a header. He looked very reserved, and at times, honestly, I thought Rodrigo maybe could have had, especially coming off a really good performance against Columbus, not just in the goal department, but defensively as well. I thought maybe he wasn't as good as we would have hoped, and even Thomas had to kind of cover for him a bit. I just thought he looked really reserved. He looked very professional. It was quite a solid performance. There was maybe like one or two moments that I can think of where that looked a little bit shaky, but nothing really ever came of it. I actually wish we had Adam here, because Adam was saying that, you know, Sebas had to drop in and cover for him a bit, and I must admit that I didn't necessarily admit that, not that it didn't happen, but it was just not something that I picked up on one way or the other. But I think Tommy looked good. I thought that he deserves the opportunity to maybe not start right away. Obviously, I don't think that he should be a starter, because Rodrigo has a decent resume, if you will, of performances throughout the, you know, his time here. But if there's ever a time, and also you don't really want to start two left-footed center backs, I think, but if there's ever a time where we switch to like a, you know, a three back or a five back even, I think that if he is out there, it's not necessarily a point of concern. It would be a point of intrigue because we have to see if it's something like, you know, what you said, where if he's able to consistently show his talent, because players can be talented, but if they can't show it consistently, you know, it's as good as being untalented, I guess you could say.
Yeah, Sorry.
Go ahead, finish your point.
Okay. You done?
Am I? I was going to fucking probably keep rambling.
No, you're okay. Great podcasting here. All I was going to say is with Williams, I really liked your point about him, like, getting past the ball. There was that spell around the 84th minute, 83rd minute, and we were literally playing through him while trying to keep possession to hold our lead. Like, yes. We had a solid, I'd say, 15, 20 pass sequence of just passing the ball around, keeping it, being calm and composed. Tampa were applying pressure. And I was like, why are we going through Williams in this phase of the game? I mean, he must have had six or seven separate touches on the ball in that sequence. Just, he was like the hub of keeping possession at that point of the match. And I was like, that was very impressive to me. I'm not going to sit here and say I thought he was perfect, nor am I going to sit here and say that I think that he should be starting. I think the position in the squad where he's at now is perfect. He's going to see minutes, like we all said. And I just think he had a good game, personally. I think that's just the easiest thing I can say, and it's great to see on his debut. Made good tackles. You know, I think he made one or two, like, big tackles, like, in the box.
Yeah, one was maybe, like, goal-saving, arguably, in the first half, I remember.
Yeah, or, like, could have had a shot off on a tight angle as well. Like, not him, but he stopped a shot at a tight angle, I believe. So really good. And like you said, it's the ability to perform over multiple games. I've got the game on here, and actually 20th minute, he has two blocks in, like, the span of under a minute. So if you guys want to see some good Thomas Williams play, 20th minute of the match. But yeah, it's the ability to perform like that over a course of games. That's the difficult part. So
if he is to start, you know, struggling a bit as well, obviously, I think people have to keep in mind, I'm sure they will, that he's just a 17-year-old. And if he is to not perform even for like an entire year, it doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't have some sort of future at this club or in the game. It's a hard thing to kind of perform consistently at a young age. And also you can kind of overplay players, which is why someone like Gagas Slonina, as much as he's doing quite well right now, and it's a little bit less like this for goalkeepers, but you can overplay young players, which I also think is something that we're going to have to be careful of. But that being said, we have a manager who's quite good at fostering young players, particularly in the MLS. So I think that Thomas Williams right now is, as you say, in a perfect position in this club because he's pretty much our third center back. Maybe we'll get into like a back three if we ever decide to do that, where he'll have a bit more cover and a bit more time. And he's got a good performance under his belt. So I think he is in a really good position to develop as a player. So that's quite exciting.
Yeah, ideally I'd like to see like maybe a tiny bit more than Mikey Halliday. What was that, last season? Or was that two seasons ago now? Maybe it was last season. Or like two seasons ago, I think it was Bender who got the start on the final day against Nashville or something like that. And like, I'd like to see more than that, but some starts here and there, but nothing too crazy sort of thing. I think that's a good way to do it because you're right, you can't overplay young players. These kids' bodies are still developing. They shouldn't be playing 90 minutes week in, week out, that's for certain. So I'm really excited about him. And I do think he can do it in MLS. So I don't think any of the situations he was put in this match are situations that would not happen in MLS, personally. Let's kind of move on here, though. Poor first half is what you said, is what I think a lot of people are kind of coming to. I personally attribute that to, this is Tampa's, you know, this is their pinnacle game of the season. This is Open Cup. You get to play against an MLS team. We're gonna be all out for it. We're gonna be up for it. This is our starting 11. We're gonna work hard. We're gonna fly into tackles. We're gonna try and shock the world, and this is a rivalry, so it's even higher, right? So I attribute that to that. Is that where you kind of, and I should pivot to the other side and say, and this is some of our backups, these are players who some of them have barely played more than 50 minutes this season. So they're kind of rusty. And like, so for example, Vanderwater, he's played what, all of 15, 20 minutes this season off the bench.
Yeah.
Like, so we're a little rusty. Do you put it to that? Or do you think it might've been that they just, their system was better than ours to start the match?
Well, I guess you definitely could say that. Cause like one thing that I would say, like tactically why I think we struggled a lot is, we played three players who are essentially function as a six. Maybe Urso is a bit of a box-to-box midfielder. But I think, you know, Mendez, as like good as he is in a lot of ways, and he has a lot of good qualities, especially even as a passer as well, he's not necessarily somebody who's going to be able to like completely unlock a defense and get the ball into the front three consistently from a deep line position, I feel like. And he's quite good at receiving the ball, playing with the center backs, moving around the field, and then playing it into Pereira, who's in the next phase of attack, who can then advance the ball forward into the front three, into that phase of attack, and then we can kind of get out. And I think, like, Urso, as much as Urso is having a good season in terms of scoring goals, I think that maybe in some aspects of his game, I don't want to say he's, like, regressed or what, but he's, like, never necessarily been the type of player that is going to play in sort of a 8-come-10 role like Mauricio might. Turn and receive the ball and really keep an attack going in like a and spray the ball around and start attacks even. So we just didn't have any players like that who could do that, like that could connect, you know, the defenders to, you know, the player shielding the back line and to the, you know, the tens or the 8-come-10s like Mauricio or even Pato dropping deep, which he did a little bit. We didn't really have a player like that. And I think that's why we struggled so much. Like it really did feel like we were kind of pressed in our own box a while. And I just feel like I would constantly see like Urso or Mendez picking up the ball. And there was a spot on the field where there was like 10 yards of space that I feel like Mauricio would typically occupy. And there was nobody there. And that was really making it hard for us to spring forward and get out.
I think the goal was for Perea to be there. And he's never succeeded in that role, but he's always been used, or not always, but quite often used like that from Pereja. The other thing is, I think a lot of our buildup was kind of Pato was drifting around, drifting wide, and in the first half, Vanderwater was kind of taking up that central role at times.
Yeah.
And obviously, we'll talk about it more in the second half, but that kind of switched to Benji, obviously, when Vanderwater came off. But first and foremost, with Mendez, I'm glad you brought him up. I was not very happy with his performance. I think that the passing forward really, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was where I was sitting. I was actually in the West Club for this match. And I don't know if it was just me being in the center of the field and watching him for a full 90, but I could see the difference between him and Araujo. And there were times where it's like Araujo would have made that pass and Mendez didn't even attempt it. I couldn't tell you how many times I saw Mendez look over to the bench and put his hand up apologetically. It must have happened 3 or 4 times. That's the kind of stuff you don't catch on the TV. But when you're at the match, you can see everybody. You can see their movements, their motions, when they're apologizing to the coaching staff because they messed up. And it's like maybe he just had an off game, but I think that's more the standard when it comes to Mendez. I'm not saying he was awful, but in that aspect of the game and specifically discussing first half, that's where I was like thinking Araujo would have been better here. But this is these are our backups after all.
Yeah, I think that I can definitely understand what you're saying. Like Mendez, I don't necessarily think he was giving away the ball too much, but he just kind of was.
No. He was very negative. Safe with his passing.
Yeah,
safe and
safe, I guess, is probably, I don't know what would be a better word for it. But it was just not much was going on in terms of advancing. And because we were, like, under it so much, like, sometimes we would get the ball to Pato or something like that, and Benji and Vanderwater would have to catch up. So we were never really able to spring forward and kind of release the pressure, I guess. And a lot of that, I guess, is because of Mendez. And I think part of that can be, you know, like you said, maybe someone like Araujo would try to advance the ball in a scenario where he wouldn't. But I also just think I personally would look at the field like I was sitting like dead center of the field in the wall, as you say. And I could just see him holding the ball, looking upfield, and it would either be like a short pass to Benji, who was kind of being marked out by, you know, the opposition defender, or like an advancing ball to Pato, which maybe Araujo would try. But Pato was really kind of isolated, as much as he was like, he would be backing up against one defender. So you might have a chance of beating that defender. So maybe you do try to play it in. He's good at holding up the ball. But yeah, it was just options were not abound. And I can't agree that I thought, like, I guess this is what you're saying. Like, I was thinking at times, it's not pretty, but I was thinking like almost go route one and just try to get the ball into Pato, allow him to hold it up and then get the play to develop and release a bit of pressure. But yeah, it was just us turning and playing the ball to Schlegel or Thomas Williams, even, who had the most passes completed in the game because of things like this. It was just, at least in the first half, I think we improved a bit in the second. It was negative or just non-productive, non-advancing, whatever you want to say, a lot of the midfield passing.
Yeah, the passing, I think I like your point there as well with the there was nowhere to pass to. Whether it was people not showing, people not in the right spots to receive the ball, sitting too deep, that's another thing as well. I kind of do want to ask you about that. Do you think Pareja was just showing Tampa some respect, trying to get through this first half where we've got some, like I talked about, rusty players? Do you think he purposely sat a little deep and tried to absorb pressure and be cautious and not allow Tampa to gain steam? Because I don't think they ever gained a ton of momentum in this match. And maybe that was just part of Pareja's game plan.
Yeah, I mean, they, like, where they found most of their success, I would say, was probably, like, in the wings. And they never really, I would say, I mean, there was maybe, like, two, like, scenarios. One was kind of caused by us, like, Schlegel mishit a clearance and, you know, Stadahar had to be on his toes, you know, to you know, prevent an own goal, essentially. But other than that, there really wasn't much in the sense of like a clear cut chance, I would say, for Tampa in the first half. And part of me kind of thinks, because, you know, we were coming off of a road trip to Columbus, which is a, you know, 3-4 hour flight. And then we got a big game against the Red Bulls coming up. You know, they're right behind us in the East at the moment. I think that we kind of were just trying to play out that first half potentially in a draw, or like keep it 0-0 rather in the first half. And then, as we saw, you know, we made some second half substitutions right at the start of the second half. I think then we were like, okay, we're going to try to get a bit more of the ball, create more chances, and put this game away, which, you know, we did, luckily. And I do really think, because, you know, as much as, yeah, maybe Andreas Pareja, that is, was supposed to, you know, be the advancing player and the link between, you know, Sebas or Junior even and the attack, it just never was going to be the same without a player like Pereira, Mauricio Pereira, or even like Facundo to be an out-and-out creator. I think that we were just kind of trying to absorb pressure and then play that game out in halftime and then allow some players who have seen a lot of the field, like Mauricio and Facundo, to come in and do what they do and then be a little bit fresh for the game coming up, which is a dangerous game. We've seen some teams, MLS teams, that has come out or go out rather already, like Chicago lost to Union Omaha, the Crew lost, Austin FC lost. So you never know. It's a dangerous game to play, but I kind of do think in the first half that we were maybe just trying to play for a draw and then bring in reinforcements and then try to close the game out. Like, I kind of do think that it's like, it was a bit of a tactical thing. I think I put that on Twitter. Like, that's at least what it was feeling like, because all three of the midfielders, it looked like they were playing, not even just like all three of them were sitting in like a box to box faction. They were all sitting like as if they were trying to shield the back line. And part of that was because we weren't able to release pressure. Maybe they would have advanced a bit more if we could, but we were really just not trying too hard to go forward except for our front three. And then just kind of, I don't want to say inviting pressure, but we weren't necessarily doing anything to put Tampa off.
Yeah, it did feel very timid. It felt very timid the first half. Yeah. And it did almost feel calculated. And I think the Columbus match, the New York Red Bulls match coming up, the rustiness of the players, I think that there's an answer with all of that in there somewhere. Also, I don't want to obviously pin it on one player, but I do want to kind of shift the conversation to this player in specific. Vanderwater, obviously, getting pulled off at halftime. Part of me that we just talked about, like, maybe this was the tactics, but there are warning signs that this was not actually the tactics, right? We had a triple sub at halftime. I know we were both at the game, but I'm rewatching the game here, and about halfway through the first half, Urso is holding a piece of paper from Pareja. Clearly something needed to switch, right? And I was, again, sitting on the west side of the stadium, and so Pareja was right beneath me, and him and the coaching staff were deep in conversation a lot. So it felt like some things were not working. And one of the things that wasn't working was this player, Vanderwater, right? I'm going to be honest, I was very excited when looking at his highlight reel for, I think it was Heracles. But honestly, his time for Orlando has been pretty average at best. I mean, I think both offensively and defensively, he's just an average player. I was shocked to hear people have been calling to start this guy. And people want to see him play, and in this squad, I don't see how he ever becomes a starter. For me, I'm not even sure if he's good enough to have on the squad. Like, what is your take on Vanderwater? Am I just being dramatic? Am I just being too harsh? I don't really have a one for him as an international backup.
Yeah, I think that is the biggest thing. Like, I almost think that him and Chris Mueller, though Chris Mueller at times was a great player, Chris Mueller at times was, like last season in particular, was a non-factor. I almost think that him and Chris Mueller are slightly almost interchangeable in a lot of ways. I think Vanderwater has a really good left foot for the delivery, especially like cutting in and playing in a cross. Like, it's really dangerous. It's like something that sticks out is like the Atlanta game. Like, he has a very good delivery, I think. And he is a technically pretty decent player. And, you know, you mentioned that he did quite well for Heracles. But, you know, that level is at least not your Ajaxes, not your Feyenoords, not your PSVs. But I think that once you get outside of that, I think the level of competition in the Eredivisie is comparable, at least to the MLS. So him doing well there did as well make me interested, at least to see what he's doing, how he's doing. But I would agree. I don't know. I thought he wasn't bad, honestly, last year. Like, I didn't find him to be a terrible player. I didn't think that he was good.
He's
this
not
game.
Terrible.
That,
no. Yeah.
Not that's what you're saying. But I didn't think he was great this game. But I didn't necessarily think that he was awful this game. I just kind of think our front three was extremely isolated. But, you know, there probably is something going on for some reason. Oscar Pereira doesn't trust him. He hasn't really played that much through the off of the season. And as you say, he is holding up an international slot. So if you're just going to ice someone on the bench as an international player, that's a little bit of, like, you know, not questionable, but it's like you don't want to be doing that, particularly somebody that we had to pay a transfer fee for. I think he has good qualities. It's just, you know, I think there are players who are ahead of him. Like, I think he's technically better probably than Benji, but I think that there are other things that Benji does that is quite irreplaceable almost in the team in some aspects.
So
it's hard for him to get in.
If we had a combined player of Benji and Vanderwater, then we'd be sitting pretty. That guy's name is Gaston Gonzalez, by the way, who we're gonna come up on soon. But speed of Benji and goal scoring of Benji and technicality
off ball ability
Vanderwater, off ball, like, of Benji, technical ability of Vanderwater, like,
delivery.
Yeah, that's a really good player. But we just kind of have them as Benji's superpower is his physicality, and Vanderwater's superpower is his ability to do stuff with the ball. So also, it goes without saying, Vanderwater is a recently new dad, right? That's another part of this discussion. Mm-hmm. I think there was an Instagram post at 6 a.m. yesterday morning of him with his crying baby. So maybe he had a not so great performance because he was literally up at 6 a.m.
Yeah, maybe he was up late.
Yeah, maybe the wife needs to handle that on game day or something. You got an important match coming up. He's starting. Maybe you are on baby duty that day. But honestly, this isn't a new thing for me personally. It's not this match. Oh, I'm done with him. And I'm not necessarily done with him. Like, a player can always have a string of good performances and yada yada. But I'm getting the warning signs that Pareja doesn't trust this player.
Yes. I think that's one of the biggest takeaways
that
he was yanked to have.
Yeah. He wasn't doing well offensively. He was fine defensively, but I point back to the Montreal match where defensively he was awful, and we were up a man, I think. Or maybe we were 10v10 at that point, but he was quite literally awful. Again, only one match, but he's not a great defensive asset. And yeah, we know Pareja and defensive winger duties, I should say.
He didn't do anything that screamed he has to be started or even come off the bench or something this game, for sure.
Yep. All right, so let's move on to the second half here quickly. Obviously, we get the penalty. I think we both think it's a pen. Pretty standard penalty.
Yeah.
Excuse me, Pato dispatches it. Yeah. Good work by Benji at the central striker role. So like we talked about, Vanderwater was kind of floating into that space. Pato was floating away from that space. Second half, it turned into Benji. And, I mean, for the penalty, I guess we can talk about this. Starts with Thomas Williams dribbling into midfield. I believe he plays it into Pato. Pato then plays it to Pereira, who obviously came off the bench. Pereira plays it through to Benji, who then Benji goes in and gets pulled down for the penalty. So starts with Williams, ends with a penalty and goal for Pato. Benji, I thought, did really good at central striker that wasn't his main position at that time, but he just would float into that space and then he would have that duty. He was holding up play well. He was being a nuisance to the back line. We just seemed to work a lot better in that second half. How did you feel about his performance in general on the night?
Yeah, well, obviously he had a similar scenario that I think most of our front three had in the first half, where they were not able to get into the game for reasons maybe outside of their control. But I think that Benji, as a player, as a whole, like, this is going to apply to the night, but also general analysis, I guess, of him as a player. Like, I sit in section two, which, for those of you who don't know, is like right by gate A, opposite of the wall. So the wall's left, I guess you would say, right by the corner flag over there. So I see a lot of Benji, I guess, quite up close. So maybe he's one player that I might be able to kind of talk about a bit better than I would someone else. But it's like whenever he is on the wing and he picks up the ball and he has to stand up and dribble against a player, like, he is able to get a step on a player, but it never quite feels like he is completely in control. Like, there's a little bit of almost like chaos to him when he's on the ball. And it hurts to say, because I
let Ben. I can tell you why, Chase. I can tell you why. He can't dribble. It's fairly simple. He can't dribble. He kicks the ball and he runs after it, but he cannot close control dribble. He does it about as well as I do it, and I can't do it at all.
His technical ability, and that was something that we even saw, if anyone watched like the Olympic qualifiers for the U.S. when he was with the under-23s. Like, he got an assist through his time there, but he did not get received very well by a lot of U.S. men's national team fans, which they are a whole different kettle of fish, I guess you can say. But he's just not a technical player, I would say, unfortunately, at least at this point in his career, which he's still, he's not super young, but he's not old. There's time to develop that a bit more, at least. Not, he's not going to become, you know, Chavi or anything like that. But whenever he's forced to stand up against a player, he might be able to get space and even have an opportunity to get a shot, but really nothing ever comes of it. And he's not really the type of player that delivers a great cross or anything like that. So I think moving him into the central areas really maximizes what he is best at, particularly if he's alongside. Like, I think him and Kara would be not necessarily a clash of styles, but they wouldn't mesh together too well if they were played in the front two. But him and Pato is quite interesting because Pato can almost play as a bit of a second striker and then play the ball into Benji. And if we can minimize as much Benji has to do on the ball and utilize his skills off the ball and his ability to finish if he is given a bit of space, and he finds space quite consistently, I think if we're able to get the ball to him, he can be at least much more of a threat than he is on the wing, which, you know, he still pops up with a goal here and there on the wing. Like, he provides something there. But I think that's what we saw with the penalty. Like, he was holding up against the center back and he has insane amounts of pace. He's also quite a strong player, especially for somebody who, he's not short by any means, but he's not necessarily, you know, Derelike or Urchin Carr or something like that. He was able to hold off the player. He let the ball run and he was able to get in behind. And, you know, he's someone who's quite decent at finishing 1v1, I would say, at least as decent as you could hope for a homegrown player that you're paying probably next to nothing in the MLS. So like something like we saw with where he drew the penalty is what you want to see out of Benji Michel if he's playing in a central, you know, central role, and something that I think that we could see a bit more if we want to kind of alter that a bit. And, you know, he's good off the ball when he plays on the wing and stuff like that. Like, he's good at making runs and stuff like that. But it's just once he gets on the ball and he's forced to take more than one or two touches, it's like, it's not great, unfortunately, as much as I love him, as much as I will defend him to the death. But it's just, that is just not what he is as a player. He's a player who's good off the ball. He knows how to use his body well, and he can hold up a bit, and he's good at finishing. He's good at finding space, and he's quick, this side or the other. But if we're asking him to beat a man with technical ability, it's just not playing to his strengths, which is not what he was doing in the second half, and he played quite well. So that was good to see.
Note here, it just hit the 45th minute, and Thomas Williams has made another block, like another shot blocked from him. I think that's three now. As for Benji, you want him running onto the ball. I think it's plain and simple. You want him, the ball played into space that he's running into. And that's why, you know, that famous, I know we lost the game 5-2, but the famous Chicago match, Pereira told me to run and I'll find you. And he found him time and time and time again in that match. That's the situation you want Benji in. And getting him in behind like that, that's like you were talking about with Vanderwater. That is something that coaches have to deal with. Opposition coaches have to adjust to speed. They have to adjust to people running in behind, because everything seems so complicated. But if you just get a fast guy out there, a la Benji, a la Juan, you can't just let them run past your players, or else you're going to concede. So you have to sit maybe even if it's 2 yards deeper, whatever, just to give your guys that head start. That is 2 yards more in your favor, and that is that's a good thing. That those little, it's called a game of inches for a reason. So yeah, Benji in the middle, I thought he was good. I really like that pairing that you put together, Pato and Benji as a two. I agree, him and Kara wouldn't work because Kara makes runs in behind. He does. I know he's not very fast, but he will get that separation from his defender and make those runs. I feel like they would just get in each other's way. So I think you're right. I really like the him and Pato idea though. All right, let's go ahead and move to, I guess we should give Urso his due, gets another goal. I don't have much to say on him. other than he just keeps getting into the box and he keeps scoring.
If he was not scoring these goals, which obviously it's stupid and weird to say this to take goals away from a player, but like if he was not showing up on the score sheet, I would honestly say he has not been playing great this season, but he is just so good at just kind of arriving late into the box and getting on the receiving end of a cross, or, you know, I think this goal was like he was just kind of arriving late in the box, and I think Pereira played the ball into him. He's just so good at finding space and then putting the ball away, and I think that that is a good skill to have. I wish he was a bit better at like progressing the ball or something like that, but even still, just his prowess, I guess you can say, in the box is something that has been great this year and is arguably what's keeping him in the squad. And I can't really think of anything else in this game that he did other than score a goal, but obviously goals are the biggest thing in the sport, unfortunately. So not unfortunately, but you know, just that's the nature of it. So if he continues to do this at the rate, which it's going to be hard, particularly as like an 8 or 6, even as he is, but he's been really good at it throughout the season so far. So that's what's kind of keeping him in the ups, I guess, in the plus.
Yeah, not much more to say on that, really. I agree with all that. Do you want to quickly touch on Tampa's goal? Do you have any thoughts about it?
Ooh, can I be honest with you? And I haven't even gone back and looked at it. It was right after our goal. I tweeted this out. I have no idea what happened on their goal. I have to be real with you. So you're going to have to come in with that one.
All right, so I just pulled up the replay because I hadn't actually watched it back either. We lose the ball. I think Juan passes it into Benji, and Benji just loses out on the... It's not a good pass to him. It's Pereira who passes it to him, not Juan. And he just hits it a couple inches to the left, and Benji doesn't get there. And then, honestly, they fade a ball out, a good pass out to Juan's space that he vacated because he was going up the pitch to be an option for Pereira. So Schlegel goes out there. And, I mean, some pretty poor defending from Schlegel, in my opinion. He just stands there and just kind of like, it looked like he was playing, two-hand touch football. Like, he literally just puts his two hands on him as the guy dribbles past him in the box. And then the ball goes to Janssen's guy. Janssen gets a touch on the shot, I think, bounces around, and the Tampa player just slides past Thomas Williams. Like, just for me, my biggest grievance there would be Schlegel and how easily his player got past him.
I just watched it as well. He just got glided right by.
Yeah, I didn't even try. It was weird. Another goal right after we score. I mean, obviously you think back to the LAFC match where that happened multiple times in that match. We equalized against Chicago, and then within, I think, 10 minutes, they scored the winner. Not Chicago, Cincinnati. It's been a theme this season. Portland, we score, we go up a man. Like, we're not really doing an amazing job of holding on to leads, like within the 5-10 minute range that you want to hold on to leads for a bit. So that's a worry, but we kept the 2-1, obviously, so not terrible. All right, I think that's enough of that. I don't really have any other talking points surrounding the match. Let's go ahead and get into Gaston Gonzalez. We've all seen the news, torn ACL, at least that's what the reporting is. Out for, obviously, he's going to have surgery. He's done for the season. Last match for Union de Santa Fe. Heartbreaking, but we're still going for the player, as is the reporting. First and foremost, where do you stand on the injury? Where do you stand on signing him? Going forward with that, like, if we had an out, should we take it? Just your thoughts on the situation as a whole.
I mean, obviously, it fucking sucks. Like, non-contact injuries especially are never... Like, as soon as I saw the video of it and I saw that it was a non-contact injury, it wasn't like somebody, I don't know, left a leg in on a tackle and he had to come off. It's like, that does not look good. You know what I'm saying? Like, muscular injuries, tendon injuries are something that can plague a player for, you know, I mean, some people are able to shed it off and some people are, you know, not able to do that. And I, you know, it's yet to be seen what he'll be able to do. I don't necessarily think that, you know, we should have called the signing off because he's someone who's able to create for himself. He's able to create for others. He's able to, you know, do work off the ball. And he's even like, he's something that like, whenever I watch him, he's like physically, he's like quite an impressive player. Like he's a bit taller than you would expect for a winger. So he looks pretty good. Like,
he's like 6'1" and he's like 20 years old. And that boy is built. He's got an impressive frame for a 21 year old.
You call him like a straight line runner as well. In some ways,
he is
like,
yep,
he's able to drag players off the ball. It sounds like maybe he can do a lot of the things that Benji does, as well as, you know, be a bit more competent if he finds the ball at his feet. And you know, I think that behind the scenes, I guess, obviously we talk a lot about behind the scenes, but we don't necessarily know what goes on. I'm sure that they've kept their eye on him for a while and they really like what they see. So I think that it's worth it to bring him in. And then, you know, even if he's still, I don't know if he's still going to have to, I saw that he was like due to come in like May, whatever, and then like pass an evaluation or whatever. I don't know if we're going to be able to get him in to kind of be around the club, just not be an official player or like, I don't know. That's a whole lot of logistical stuff, but I don't think we should have pulled out. I'm glad that we've got a player that we've had our eye on for a while who is going to fill a position that we really probably do need a bit of cover with, especially all the things that we've talked about. Benji and Vanderwater is not looking particularly spectacular. And, you know, Facundo can play on the left, but he's particularly a right-sided player. So it's good to bring in somebody like him. It just sucks. You know, he's probably going to be out for this season, but he's still only 20. He's going to be in the U22 initiative. So, I mean, you know, whatever willing, I'm hoping that he's still able to come in and next season be a key player. And, you know, he's also somebody that you have to look at as, like I said, he's a U22 initiative player. He's good at maintaining roster compliance. Like making an MLS roster is almost like an art. And if you're able to find a player who is not going to cost you too much on the books or on the salary cap or what have you, and, you know, keep you roster compliant, but then kind of he's in that next level of player, I guess. I don't know if I'm making any sense with what I'm saying.
No, Chase, that's an excellent point that I didn't think about.
Yeah, it's worth it for sure.
Getting the right... Sorry, I muted myself like an idiot. Getting the right player at the right price in MLS consistently across your squad is one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's an excellent point in regards to should we sign this player or not. I think we should.
And he's still going to be – he's only going to be 21 probably when he's fully fit and able to kind of integrate himself back in. So yeah, he's still going to fall under the U22 initiative.
And if we give him a year, right, it's what, end of April?
Yeah.
So we could see him – it sucks, but we could see him June of next season. Right.
Yeah, I think reports right now are that he's out, slated to be out for 8 months, which would have him back in training and back to full fitness right at the beginning of the new year, which would be right around where preseason would start and right around like, I don't know if we're going to have to push the transfer off because he won't be able to pass a medical or whatever. But like January will come around and he'll come in and then he can get integrated with the squad before the season begins, hopefully.
Yeah. So
but that's yet to be seen.
My thought process on what is it called? My June timeframe thing is see him at full fitness, playing consistently, because there will be setbacks with his injury return. It just happens, yeah, unfortunately. So, like look at Yosef Martinez, right? For Atlanta, I said it when he went down with his ACL years ago. I said, we're never going to see the same Yosef Martinez again. It's just not going to happen. ACLs can be, they're not career ruining injuries anymore. You look at Jordan Morris, Paul Ariola, yada, yada. The examples are all there, but they're career hampering. And for a player like Gaston Gonzalez, I think he can return. And he's so young that he'll be fine. I think my take on it is this. I think every single decision that anybody at Luis Muzy and Ricardo Moreira's level in this sport makes is a risk. Everything's a risk. Yeah. Facundo Torres was a risk. Pato was a risk. Mendez was a risk. Araujo was a risk. Mauricio Pereira, a free transfer, best player in Krasnodar history, was a risk. There's risk involved with any of it. And the contract talks, right? The transfer talks, we didn't want him to stay until May. Union de Santa Fe wanted him to stay till May. They wanted him to compete for the first half of their season. You know, they have games to win. They have fans to please. They have shirts to sell. You know, they have plenty of things. You know, they don't have a lot of money. This transfer was going to like fund them for the next season or two or something like that. And it's like a $3 million transfer. Like, it's a hard thing to negotiate. There's risks involved. Mm. We agreed to it because we are thinking long term. We think we have a good enough team to get through this first half of the season, which we did. Gaston Gonzalez would not have changed any of these results, in my opinion, good or bad. So we got really unlucky. I was really, everyone who's listened to this podcast has heard me. I was really, really excited for this player. I thought he was going to really help us balance out our attack. You know, he was going to be the Juan on the left. That's what I've been saying, straight line runner. He's going to get into those pockets of space on the byline that Juan gets to, except he's going to be better at crossing. He is a good crosser. He takes the corners and set pieces for Union de Santa Fe. That's how he gets a lot of his assists. He scores a couple goals. He's got a strong left foot, very physical player. Will work hard defensively and make tackles. Like, you guys saw the scouting report. You can see why I'm excited, and you can see how I feel he fits into our system. I've been saying it. I think he's a better Benji. That's exactly who I think he is. A left-footed, better Benji. Just too long, didn't read sort of thing. So I'm very disappointed as a fan that we're not going to see it this season. But I think long term, we should still go for this guy. I think the smart thing to do is we go for this guy, we bite the bullet now, and in two seasons, hopefully we get to see the fruits of that bullet sort of thing. The fruits of our labor.
Yeah. No, so I agree with you. It's definitely very disappointing too, though. Like, not to though, but like, it's definitely disappointing because he's I just kind of thought about this, like, in reference to, like, I think personally we should try to really go for the Open Cup this year. And it would have been lovely to have, whether or not he is the player who plays in the Open Cup in the midweek games, or he's the one that's playing more so in the league, and then we have, like, more depth to come on in the Open Cup, if that makes sense. It's just, it is very frustrating that we were looking to add a piece that is in a position where we need some help that could help us if we're trying to compete on multiple fronts this season, and then for him to go down. Obviously, it's not his fault, that goes without saying, but it's just unfortunate and frustrating.
Do you think we have the depth to go for Open Cup?
I mean, I think how many more games would be left? Like, we would have to go through, like, four rounds or something like that.
We would have Philly in round of 16.
Yeah.
We'd have quarterfinal, semifinal, final. So we'd have to win four more games to win the final. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, listen, I don't think that there's particularly any team that is going to be set up like a Man City would be to go for the Caramel Cup or whatever it's called in the FA Cup, where like they have two players, like a world-class player and then a very, very good player in every position or something like that. So I think every MLS team is going to struggle a bit in some areas, like you saw against us in Tampa. But it's just like still like I think it's I mean, we made it to like a semifinal when we were not particularly one of the best teams in the league. And I just really, I'm an advocate for going for the US Open Cup, I guess you could say. Like, I love the thought of pushing for a cup competition, I guess, especially for a team who has yet to get silverware in the MLS. Mm-hmm. But obviously that's going to be harder now than I had foreseen in the future.
All right, well, yeah, let's quickly, sorry if I cut you off there. Let's quickly talk about the Red Bulls match before we get into fan questions. The main talking point I wanted to discuss was New York Red Bulls currently lead the league in pressures in the final third. And this is something we struggled with last season with the Red Bulls. Obviously lost both games against them, home and away, at a time where they were really struggling for results. Now they're not struggling for results. I think they have a much more cohesive team. I could go through all of their results and just discuss why I think some of them have been a bit unlucky. But honestly, they've been good. I do know in their Open Cup match, they got a red card. I don't know if that carries over to MLS, but it was Christian Caceres who is their backup center mid. So that doesn't even really matter to me because Frankie Amaya has been starting in there and he's been very good for them this season. They've also got a new player in Luquinhas who's good. And they've obviously still got Drew Yearwood as well. Omir Fernandez has been scoring some goals as of late. What have you made, maybe not what have you made of the Red Bulls, but what do you make of our ability to deal with a high press? Because I don't feel like we've seen that too often this season. Maybe first half versus Montreal, and we looked pretty poor that half.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be the first to say I am a college student. At the moment, I have not been able to watch as much of around the MLS, barring Orlando City, throughout the season. So if I was to give any beyond surface level analysis, I guess, of the Red Bulls, it would be bullshit, I guess, for lack of a better term. But it's I think that we have the capability to deal very well with the press, less so now that Antonio Carlos is gone. But if we are to have Janssen in there, he's able to advance the ball pretty well for a center back. And I think that if we have Jean Moutinho in there as well, who I expect probably him to start because we saw Kyle Smith at least play the first half of the game, you know, the midweek game, I think that he's someone as well who can be valuable in breaking a press. And maybe that's why we also didn't see Mauricio play, because, you know, we kind of talk about him being that link between the holding midfielders in the front three. And that's a big part in getting forward and not it, like the biggest part, I guess, obviously, of getting forward is not even just advancing the ball, but it's also relieving pressure off the back line and allowing us to kind of move our point of confrontation with the back line forward. I think that we are set up to handle it as well as any other team, I guess, in the MLS. I don't necessarily think that we're like as press resistant as I thought we were. Maybe if you want to go all the way back to like the MLS's back tournament in 2020 or something like that, where we were playing really great soccer consistently, playing off the back and all that. But I think it's still something that we're able to deal with. I think that the point that I'm most concerned with is Schlegel and Urso or Perea or whomever is going to start in that other central midfielder role, where if they are not.
I would like to see Mendez Araujo starting lineup.
Yeah, I heard you talk about Araujo a little bit earlier, and I think that that is the one aspect of this game that I've been a little bit like I don't want to say disappointed with, but I think at times, like on the ball when he tries to advance the ball, he hasn't looked spectacular. But
he's been cautious as well, but he's done it more than I think Mendez has done it. Because when I've rewatched a couple of these matches, and there are times where it's like, oh, I missed that, where he would make like a, you know, a 15 yard line breaking pass into Cara's feet, and it's like, oh, hello. And it's like, I don't see Mendez doing it. It's not something that pops. It never really leads to anything, but it has the potential to, and it definitely helps us keep possession a little bit better in more dangerous areas.
Yeah, and you mentioning like Cara, I probably would like to see, and we'll see, like Pato, you know, had you know, he played. Did he play the 90 in this cup game? I can't remember.
I believe he did.
Yeah, he did play the 90. I can't remember if he was like an 85th minute substitution or something like that. But, you know, he played quite a lot there, and I don't know if they're going to rest him, you know.
Oh, no, he got subbed. Yep, 88th minute. So he, yeah,
okay. He played, yeah, pretty much. So I don't know if we're going to see him starting or what, but I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, Cara centrally and then Pato, like, kind of in that left wing floating role, whatever you want to call it, because those two are players who are pretty good. Like, you can get the ball into their feet and advance the ball to them, and they're good at, like, holding up the ball. And I think that that's also kind of valuable in breaking the press. So, yeah, if I was to go, like, a front three, I would like to see them. But I don't know where I'm going with that beyond that. But
my main concern with that would be I would actually have Faku on the left and Pato on the right. Mainly because New York Red Bull's right flank consists of a Lewis Morgan, and I don't think putting Pato out there would be a smart idea to have Moutinho go against Lewis Morgan one-on-one. I would much rather have Facundo Torres sit back, or maybe even a Benji to kind of sit deep and just help out there, but maybe that's what happens. Although Benji started at the weekend, so that makes me think that Pato is going to start on the right, Faku's going to start on the left, Cara through the middle, Maurizio Pereira in his normal position. Did Urso start at the weekend? Urso did start at the weekend. Faku will definitely start. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, because he didn't start in the midweek game.
Yeah, I mean he should start every MLS game if he's healthy anyway, right? Like,
yeah. Speaking of Faku, he had a chance in the Tampa game that we didn't touch on, where I feel like he has to be putting that away.
He does.
Like, he got closed down upon, but he could have taken it past the keeper. Keeper was off his line. He could have put it over him if he wanted to. I feel like that was something that I would like to see, like, him ice the game there late.
I agree. I stood up from my seat because I was expecting that to hit the back of the net, and the goalie saved, and I was like, are you kidding me? Yeah, so New York Red Bulls, my main worry is their high press. All right, let's get into some of these listener questions. I think we had a couple of these. Yes, first and foremost, at Daniel Cluley, he says, we saw the team switch to a dynamic 3-5-2 at halftime of Open Cup game. Do you think that this is something we will see more going forward in the MLS, or was it just a personnel available in tactics for this game? We have another similar one. Thoughts on the 5-3-2, 3-5-2 switch in the second half. This is from at Mike A. Spillane. Very effective in my opinion, but curious how y'all felt on it, if you think it's something we could see more often with Carlos out. So main consensus, what was your thoughts on the 3-5-2? Are we going to see it more moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I like the switch. It's going to be hard to do that consistently because we only have really three healthy center backs at the moment. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, Thomas Williams, which, as we said, you need to see a bit more of him. He's shown good ability if he's going to play as a left center back to kind of receive the ball and then keep it moving, if not even to advance the ball. I think he was 4-for-4 on long balls and stuff like that throughout the game. And Janssen, of course, he has the ability to spray the ball pretty consistently as well. It would be something that I would like to see. And I think for our fullbacks, like, I think that we have two fullbacks. Like, we often say that João Moutinho is more like a central midfielder playing the left back position, and Juan, obviously, as much as Juan, I think, is a little bit underrated defensively in some scenarios, he is obviously best. And I mean, I guess he hasn't been that great this year, like, but he's best getting forward and beating a man and then finding space. His delivery has just been off. I think that could maybe utilize our fullbacks really well. And if we're going to play like some sort of double pivot with like Mendes and Urso, and then allow Mauricio to just focus on receiving the ball and then advancing the ball, I think that's good. And, you know, we talked about how Pato and Benji, it could get the best out of Benji playing centrally. Like, it just is something that is, I mean, I'm not saying that we should switch to a 3-5-2 or anything like that, but it definitely is something that is intriguing. And I think that it could have a lot of quality. I don't know, like I think it could work well for us, especially like if we're in a pinch, if we're trying to maybe relieve a little bit of pressure or something like that, it could be something that we switch to. And I think also if we're looking to kind of foster Thomas Williams a bit, playing him in a three back rather than a flat back four where our fullbacks are pushing forward, I think that that could be best for him. So it's something that I'm not calling to switch to for like a systemic switch amongst the team, but I think that it's something that I am intrigued and wouldn't mind seeing further, specifically if we're in a scenario where we think it might call for it, like if we're trying to close out a game or something like that.
So my take on this is that basically the only reason we are seeing that it looked like a 3-5-2 is because we had three center backs on the pitch in this match. That and we actually had, it was more, we did actually have a two up top at this point, but we've had in buildup all season long, we've had someone dropping into that left center back role, whether it be our left back in Mendes, whether it be our Moutinho, whether it be our midfielder Mendes or Araujo dropping in there. Someone's always been our buildup, and this is across almost all teams now. That's the tactic. That is, everyone builds up in a 3-2-5 or a 2-3-5. That's just what it is. We had three center backs on the pitch this time, so it was a very defined back three, I think it is the thing. That being said, I'm not saying that wasn't our defensive formation. I think with formations nowadays, it's very much the defensive formation that gets called out. So where is everyone standing when the other team is building up and has the ball? A lot of teams sit back in a 4-4-2. We sit back in like a 4-3-3 right now. So we've been saying we play a 4-3-3. But all of that to say, I'm fine with it. It's been working this season when we have three at the back. The two up top, we kind of talked about earlier. I am intrigued to have Benji more as a second striker. I've always felt he's more of a second striker. Having him up there with Pato does work for me, in my opinion, as well, because he can, like, it's weird, right? Because Pato's not even like that stable number nine that you would want Benji running off of, but he does provide that link play that you would want to see with Benji, and that's what we saw in the goal. Benji floats to the middle, the ball goes up into Pato, he one touches it back to Pereira, who plays it through. That is the double striker system working perfectly, and Benji uses his body well, gets in behind, draws the foul. Penalty, goal, 1-0 sort of thing. So yeah, I'm fine with the 3-5-2 as well with Thomas Williams moving forward in a three back. He looked fine in the two back, but if we want to protect him, I think that's fine. Let's see, what else do we have in here? What do you guys think of Williams' first start from at 1MISSO? Yeah, we thought he was good. I think we covered that. Do we have any other Williams questions? I don't think so. Oh, this is a good one. At Monty in the Bank. Thoughts on our lineup for the friendly against Arsenal? Right in between two big matches. Away in Atlanta, home versus Philly. Arsenal in between.
Shoot. I mean, friendlies are always so hard to predict, obviously, because they're as much a spectacle as they are an actual game. And Arsenal are like, we're not going to see, you know, the full strength 11 that you would see on a Premier League Saturday morning or something like that. We're going to see, and you can talk to this more to the extent that I would, but we're going to see like Nketiah and some academy boys and some players who are on the fringe trying to push for a starting spot. And I think that even us, I get why MLS teams do this. Like, I'm sure we're getting money, And we're playing in one of the games, and we're also going to host Chelsea and Arsenal and stuff like that. And we're getting money and stuff like that. But it's just like, oh my gosh, like we're in the middle of our season, in the back end of our season, which is arguably more important than the first.
Arsenal and Chelsea are playing at Camping World.
Oh, are they? Oh, wow. Yeah. So we're not even getting any money for that.
Unless we're getting money for just being
from Orlando. Yeah, I don't know.
Orlando.
I get why we do. I get why teams do friendlies and stuff like that. But it's just like, I think that perhaps there could be some sort of like heavily rotated squad, and if we see somebody like Pato or Facundo, it's for not long. I mean, you know, and also like it's a friendly, so we could see a completely different first 11 in the first half, and then, you know, completely different first or completely different 11 in the second half. So it's something that I'm going to be, I mean, I'll probably go to the game, but it's like fingers crossed no one gets injured and, you know, don't bust a lung here.
Yeah. So, just kind of jog about. Success. Yeah. Do your thing. Lose by less than three. But yeah, it will be Arsenal's backups. It's got to be. Although, is there any major tournament this offseason?
What do you mean, like international tournament?
Yeah. There's no Euros, I mean, there's no World Cup. So everyone's going to be back and in preseason.
World Cup will be like winter. Yeah.
So we could have the opportunity to kind of see some starters.
Yeah, like, I think there could, like, I went to see PSG and like Tottenham, and like there was like Christian Eriksen was playing. I don't think Harry Kane was playing, but like there were some like good first choice players. But then also, like, I remember Cameron Carter-Vickers started the game, and Kyle Walker-Peters started the game, and then whomever their backup goalkeeper. Honestly, it might have been who's the guy that played for us for a little bit. It might have been him that started the game.
So Brandon Austin.
Yeah, it's for them. It's going to be like heavy rotation, and for us, God, I hope it's heavy rotation, because if we are to lose, like, oh my God, I don't even want to put this out into the world, but if we're to lose like a crucial player, whomever that might be, late into the season in a friendly, that would be just
that'd be
one
awful.
Of the worst things imaginable.
Yeah. Let's see here. General thoughts on the Gaston Gonzalez situation. I think we gave that at JC Brown. At JCBRWN. And then Jake at the Geordie Lion. What's the meaning of life? In all seriousness, is this our year?
Is this our year? I think MLS is the hardest league to predict potentially in the world. So as long as we're healthy and getting hot towards the end of the season and we make the playoffs, then it could be. But I mean, hey, this is as likely as any year for us to make some sort of deep run for some sort of silverware. So I'm more optimistic than pessimistic, which I guess has been a change in the last, in the MLS era, I'm more likely to be pessimistic than I am now. So it's good to see.
I think this team still has a ways to go. Obviously, we have a lot of time to get there as well. So it very well could be our year. But in the final third, I think we need improvements. We need a lot of luck on our side. We have some injury-prone players. Bato, Moutinho. I would say Pereira's gone down for a couple games each season. Juan has gone down a couple games each season. We're already down Carlos for a couple months. We are really, really, really risking it. Like I said earlier, every single squad decision is a risk. I think the biggest thing that has me excited for this season is the addition of Araujo, and just what that means for Urso and Mendez as a partnership, and as players themselves, because they are rotating in and out. And I think that's part of why Urso has looked so good this season. He hasn't had to start every match. He hasn't had to play 90 minutes every single week. You know, he started the Columbus match and this match, and my guess is he doesn't start against New York Red Bulls, and that's perfectly fine. I don't want him starting that match. I don't want him in there losing the ball against a high-pressing New York Red Bulls team. He can come on and be a factor late on if we're chasing the game, or just be a substitute for Araujo or Mendez. Like, That's the bit that has me most excited for this season, is I think our midfield room is really good. Perea as a fourth stringer is fine with me, and Desart isn't a bad player himself as a fifth stringer. So light in other areas of the squad, and I think in the final third we need improvement. But if we get a little lucky, if we get hot going into the season, we have the defense to win the whole thing. It's a matter of, do we have the offense, I think. And Pareja's teams always start hot. it's a trend every season, and it's the middle and end of the year where he struggles, and it's due to rotation. He just struggles to rotate his squads properly, and it's going to be interesting to see if he does it again this season. So I hope that answers your question. Is this our year? I don't know. Could be. Very well could be. At Adrian underscore Viveros, how do you think the Rowdies feel after losing 7 times in a row?
I hope they feel as bad as I did when we were losing consistently to Atlanta. Like you said, this is maybe the biggest game they have all year, except that they make like a cup final or something like that. So
yeah,
always nice to put them down.
Yes, sir. All right. Last one's for me specifically. It's that from at Mr. Dangerous. He's an MLS Now podcast listener. He says, how are you feeling about the over-under prediction earlier this season about coaches sacked? Follow up, who's next? So he asked about He asked about an over-under of coaches sacked, and I think he set it at 3.5, I want to say, and I said over.
And we're already at 1, right?
We're at 2. Hernan Losada, two. DC, Losada and Matias Almeida.
Oh, yeah.
San Jose. Yep. Everyone knew that one was coming. Who's next? Oh, gosh.
Caleb Porter's
an option. I've got my eyes on Sartini over in Vancouver. Sneakily have my eye on Peter Vermees over in SKC as well. But other than that, that would be insane, right? Who's next? I'm feeling confident, by the way, Russell, about my over pick. We're already at 2. We would need 2 more to hit that over. Does Bruce Arena get sacked?
Oh, I mean, shoot.
No.
Could be.
It'd have to be awful, awful. They'd have to be like last place going into the final stretch. Yeah, I'm going to go with who's next. I'm going to go with Sartini. I know they just hired him, but they're not looking good right now in Vancouver.
They can't seem to do anything, right? I would say this question is not for me, but I would say Phil Neville should not feel comfortable, especially if continues to go that way down for Fort Lauderdale.
The thing with me with Neville is that they know that they're going to be terrible.
Yeah.
Like, and I think they've invested in the fact that they're... I actually think that this was the best way that Chris Henderson could have... for anybody who doesn't know, Chris Henderson is their new GM. I think he's from Seattle, which is a scary thought. I think this is the best way he could have done it. Get young players, give them 2 seasons to grow and struggle and get through it together.
Yeah.
Supplement them with talent in year 3. Obviously, they're going through the 2-year struggle. They can't compete now, but they're going to have the experience that maybe a team of that age wouldn't have in 2 years. And I think that's the best strategy they could have gone for at this time.
It's a valid point. I think Phil Neville also, I don't know how much decision-making power David Beckham has over there, but he has a bit of like, I don't know if nepotism is the right word, but obviously they're old boys. So I think he's got a little more breathing room than anybody else might get.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's an awful manager, but I think they need somebody, to take the fall and lose all these games, right? Somebody has to do it. No one's gonna want to go into that job and do it. Risk their CV, no way. So I'm gonna say Sartini. Long may Miami's struggles continue. All right, Chase. Thanks for this great conversation per usual. Where can our listeners find you at?
You could find me on Twitter at VamosOC. I'm sure you could find Daniel at the pub. Also, shout out to my friend Jordan Haddad. He just like started subscribing to this podcast because he found out I was on it. So shout out to him if he's listening.
Hey, Jordan's the GOAT.
Good luck to me in my finals as well. I'm looking for any positive vibes. So appreciate that.
channel the inner Godrigo Schlegel.
Oh, yes. My doppelganger.
We did praise him a lot, by the way, on the last pod, as requested.
Oh my gosh, I was right along with Miguel. I was about to shed a tear for my man. I wasn't on the last one. Give me like 10 seconds. That was maybe my favorite Orlando City game, other than maybe like the playoff game against New York City since we've been in the MLS. Like I said this on Twitter, it was such a miserable watch for years. And now it's fun, and I like the people who play for my team. Like, it's sometimes soccer doesn't have to be difficult to enjoy. And right now, I like him. I like Ursula. I like everybody. And I am just enjoying and looking forward to watching my team play. And I think that is a blessing and not something that was available in the past.
Yeah, man. That's really well said. That's really well said. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get out of here. Have a good rest of your night. Oh, I know we went a little long, and hopefully you guys enjoyed this, and we will see you next week after a big dub.
Big win against the Red Bulls.
Against the Red Bulls, yes, sir. Vamos.
Yo.